This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome to episode 286 of the Countdown Podcast, where some of us are logical and some of us are me. My name is Wayne.
I was hoping you're going to roll with, and some of us are Wayne, but that's good enough. My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in awesome order of awesomeness. So you don't have to. Today's topic, as Wayne again has alluded, is the top 10 most illogical movie scenes.
Scenes
in which we were blown away by how ridiculous the shit that was being presented to us was.
Like, why doesn't this shit make sense?
We were meant to swallow that, no problem, and move on with the film. Mm-hmm. So this could be a very eclectic list. It wasn't an easy list to make, I will say.
No, it's not. It's actually odd to sort of find. You have to try and remember, like, when's the last time I was like, fuck off,
in a movie? I thought I would just go back. I mean, three or four instantly came to mind, no problem. And then after that, I was like,
oh. It's filling out, that's the hard part.
Yeah, and then where did I fall? And anyway, we'll get into that through the course of the countdown. But we start all of that on the other side of the segment that we call the recount.
Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount?
Oh shit, sorry. The recount is, sorry, cunt. The recount is our mail room.
That level of professionalism that I edit around week in and week out. And this, just a couple of short bits today. First of all, from Nick H, stay the fuck at home at Heisenberg Pod on Twitter said, hey, Countdown PC, this is a real dilemma for Wayne. And he had linked to a article from Empire Magazine. Tandy Newton will star alongside Chris Pine in spy thriller All the Old Knives.
Wow, my dick is hard and soft at the same time.
Will you watch that film? Does the pineness,
of course, the pineness absolutely,
the tandiness?
Absolutely.
Or does the tanniness suck away the pineness?
Well, for his sake, I hope not. But if, but yes, the pineness overcomes the tandiness.
For everyone else in the universe, a spy thriller called All the Old Knives starring Chris Pine and Tandy Newton will be absolutely awesome.
Actually sounds great. Spy thrillers, you always see spy thrillers because they're the best kind of movie.
Yeah, looking forward to that one. Thank you, Nick, for that. And then the only other bit of news / feedbacks is, of course, the results of last week's countdown, episode 285. The top 10 superior films or sophomore films by director. Mm-hmm. Wayne has smashed it. 44 votes to my paltry 16. Hard to believe given how similar our votes were. There was a lot of this. Pretty similar list. Going with Wayne, cause.
I'm in.
Now I'll give you some actual quotes. David Powell, patron extraordinaire, good friend of the show, said, Wayne easily this week. Pulp Fiction where it belongs. Matrix where it belongs. He at least mentioned Trainspotting. No contest. Sorry, Paul. Well, hopefully when I mention things, they'll work in my favour as well. Matt Rochelle said, too great and similar list, but Wayne won me over with Snatch. Fair enough. Mike T, your cousin, said, Snatch. I wrote cousin.
Answer that.
More than the only vote I think all week, any person who wrote was Lawrence Warren, who said only one person had Shaun of the Dead on the list, plus one for Paul. Thank you, sir. Hendo Henderson from the IMDb Movie Journey podcast said Slade this week did Wayne, which is a reference to his show and slaying. But there you go. Somehow I lost a vote from Nick Orton because I had Alien too low. Where was Alien on your list, Wayne?
Nowhere.
Yeah, interesting. So in other words, I was never going to win this week.
Well, perhaps he expected an alien enthusiast.
13, 12 up as we head into episode 286. And I guess, the end of September. So not too far away from crowning this year's 2020 winner. And believe me, not many people have won in 2020.
No, it's not that kind of year.
It's really not. All right then, on the other side of this music cue, let's get into this week's top 10 countdown. The top 10 most illogical movie scenes.
Sexual.
Is the topic of episode 286.
We're 286. What up?
We are 286.
What up?
There was a pause there because we're recording out of order. But anyway, we got there in the end. Wayne.
Don't tell him, Paul. Shut up.
just makes me laugh that you always go like, don't tell them. Shut the fuck up. Jeez, damn. Wayne, how did you go about this list other than Googling most illogical movie scenes?
Well, as Paul and I were saying, if you do Google illogical movie scenes, you come up with a lot of Bollywood results. And that isn't this countdown. So I'm like, I'm not sure what that is. If there's a Bollywood is just known to be illogical, or I don't know what it is. But
I think Bollywood films, having seen a few, but only the ones really in the IMDb top 250. So I'm certainly no expert, but they exaggerate things in ways that most Hollywood films don't.
Yeah, but that's perhaps the hallmark of that.
Yeah, it's a cultural thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So therefore, you know, everything you're meant to swallow and go with in a Hollywood film is kind of multiplied by three or four for a Bollywood film.
Well, that's what makes it a bit difficult. You see, you have to then go back on your own and say, when did I say what the fuck in a movie? Mm-hmm. And on what level was the what the fuck? And do I find it illogical, or is it merely that I just didn't like it?
I went with ones that instantaneously really annoyed the shit out of me, except high on my list are films where they are just full, chock full of illogical movie scenes.
Okay, yeah.
So, right? So they kind of, that it's more a quantity thing. Or the central precept of the film, the central whole point of the film is completely illogical.
That's why it's tough, because it's like top 10 illogical scenes.
Yeah, but that's it.
But that makes the movie illogical.
Yeah, the whole movie's illogical, and therefore every scene virtually.
Very tough, these things, let me tell you.
So there's a number of different ways to come at it, but why don't you lead us away then, Wayne? Your number 10 most illogical movie scene.
My number 10 is, do you remember the film that is, it's a Spider-Man film. But it
Which
is
one?
Very. It's number two. It's the one that a lot of people think is the best Spider-Man film of the Raimi era. Yeah, Doc Ock. Okay. So there's this scene where Doc Ock needs to find Spider-Man in the middle of like the movie, and Harry tells Dr. Ock that the only way to find him is to go to Peter Parker, find him first. Then a short time later, there's this scene where Peter and like Mary Jane, Kirsten Dunst, yeah, are having like a quiet afternoon in a cafe. There's this romantic, meaningful conversation, and then Doc Ock just throws a fucking car through the cafe window.
Good
at
shot,
Peter.
From what I remember.
Excellent shot, but let me tell you, he was going there. He doesn't know Peter Parker is Spider-Man. He walks up there. He's going there to throttle Peter Parker and say, tell Spider-Man to meet me at this building at this day at this time, and I'm taking your girlfriend for collateral if you don't make sure he gets that message. But he didn't know he was Spider-Man at the time. He doesn't know. You can't throw a car at the informant that you're there to talk to. It was weird.
Okay, so completely out of place. Like,
no, he's like, he would have killed him. He would have killed him and her.
Had it not been Spider-Man, he would have killed him.
Well, he didn't know it was Spider-Man.
But the point is, like, did Peter Parker do something Spider-Man-ish to save
himself? Yeah, he jumped over her and sort of dodged it and stuff. He had some Spidey sense. But, you know, he didn't know that. So, very illogical. And it kind of bugged me the whole time. Otherwise, that movie is fantastic.
Did you, therefore, go,
this is the dumbest shit anyone ever said in the history of, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here, dickhead. Time!
Well, get used to that sound effect on this particular episode.
If you fucking do that, you cunt.
All right, my number 10, and I really warred about which way to go on this one, but I'm going with my number 10 is from Joker.
Joker!
The film we saw last year, Todd Phillips' film, which polarized the audience. Yes, I can't remember if you loved it. I gave it 3 stars. I was right in the middle.
I had a problem with it.
Yeah, I didn't love the movie personally, but anyway, this was a big thanks to listener Ryan O'Neill in the Facebook listener community. Links in the show notes. Now, he pointed this out, and I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, that's really shit.
What?
So, Joker kills his ex-colleague with the little person in the room as well. And thinking there's this moment of dread. We're like, oh, he's going to kill that guy too, because that guy's just going to go and report him to everyone. But he doesn't. Yeah. He lets him go. So the little person escapes, presumably goes straight to the nearest police station and reports the murder of this guy. And
You would think?
Yeah. That's the only logical, I think, thing to do. Like, what are you going to do? Go home and just go, whew, thank God he let me go there. Thank God.
Exactly.
No, you would do something about it, right? Fair assumption to make, I believe. Cops turn up then to question him. They don't know. They don't know that there's this very guy that they're coming to talk to has recently murdered someone / let someone else go. And even if those cops didn't know because they're on the beat or whatever they were doing, when Joker, I can't remember what his name is in the film, rocks up to the TV station, by that point in time, his image is splashed across all APB, all media, and they just let him walk straight into the police station.
That I remember being a problem that I had as well, going, wait, isn't he wanted?
Exactly. And he's already a person of interest.
And he's doing a presentation. He's only doing a show.
Yep.
So, yeah, that doesn't actually make sense.
None of it makes any sense.
Lots of that shit doesn't make sense, man. The girlfriend thing doesn't make fucking sense.
Oh, that was his fantasy.
Yeah, but it's just like, and then like with the gunning down in the alley right after, like at the end of the movie, like this, the whole movie has got its own thing going on. Like, is it what's real, what's not? So I mean, maybe
that's the explanation.
That I think's what it is. Like,
none of this actually happened, and therefore he didn't murder someone, and he didn't kill someone on live TV and whatever else.
I'll be honest with you. If it turns out that we'd someday prove that it's all in his head, that will be quite a disappointment, because this is the idea here is.
Well, therefore the riots are a fantasy as well. So everything's a fantasy, which doesn't fit.
But
with,
which is though, like, because sometimes he's doing the thing where he's in a scene, he's like in the bathroom scene, then they cut back to him.
I didn't read it that way. I read the fantasy of the girlfriend, the last thing.
No, that one was pretty obvious, but like,
but everything else I think is mostly real.
Mm.
Anyway, so that's why cool. I've gone with that one number 10.
Cool. Mine's a much more later on, and this is going to be a little controversial, people. Now, there's a film called The World Is Not Enough. And it's a James Bond film, and a lot of people like to rag on it. And
is
I thought,
where he surfs?
No, that's Tomorrow Never Dies.
Oh God! But they all fucking meld together.
The Bosnian Bronze a little do, except
other than Goldeneye.
Yeah. But the opening to this film is probably one of the best Bond film openings I've ever seen. It starts with him like he's in MI6, and like the MI5, sorry, MI5, MI6, MI6. He's jetting off out of the floor of the MI5 building.
Yeah, is MI5 domestic, MI6 is international, or is the other way around?
Good question. It must be MI6.
You're the spy.
You're right. James Bond. I don't know. Spy people, okay? And he then goes and hits the Thames or whatever, and he's basically chasing this assassin who killed up a higher-ranking member of MI6 or 5. And this opening scene is wicked. He goes underwater in the boat, all sorts of shit. She's on a speedboat, this, that. At the end of the chase, the woman basically goes... launches up onto the fucking jetty and then makes her final getaway in a hot air balloon. Like, she actually gets in this slow moving bullshit hot air balloon and just goes like slowly up. And Bond's even got time to jump his boat off and jump and grab onto the rope, and that's what happens. But to me, if you had a speedboat, why do you then go to a hot air balloon? Those things can stay visible for like 2 hours. You can't exactly fuck off in it. So that was just something
so
that always bugged me.
Definitely what you said was...
This is the dumbest shit anyone ever said in the history of...
Why?
And I don't think
why you
got to
be like this
here.
With your life,
time.
Motherfucker?
Shit. Anyway, sorry, everyone.
Football. All right. My number 9 is something that we've talked about on the show. Now, I think this is an episode that will be good for new listeners. Welcome to the show. If you've never... trial the countdown before, you're about to hear some very strange shit, I can guarantee you.
Thanks to Paul.
And yeah, it's all me. And if you're a regular listener to the show, you'll have heard us talk about some of these things in different contexts before, and this is one we have spoken about. From The Dark Knight Rises. During the course of the film, the Gotham...
This could be any
well, particularly, it's Gotham PD, like the entire police force being led down / sent into the sewers, at which point Bane and his cronies blow up the entrances to the sewers and stop them getting out. Now, where they now spend... 5 months?
It's months and months. It's at least 3 months, like, kind of shit, right?
And how many cops are in there? Why would you send every single cop, for starters?
And maybe this is Jim Gordon.
Yeah.
Jim Gordon, the police commissioner who's the smart ass and everyone respects him. He's like, right, every fucker on the force, go under there.
I just had this vision of him channeling, because himself from Leon the Professional. How many cops should we send?
Everyone!
I support that joke.
Anyway, so they're all down there. They blow them up, keep them inside, basically imprisoned in sewers.
Mm-hmm.
And we do see some scenes of lowering supplies down to them. So, they're not fending by eating shit, literally, through the next 3 to 5 months, whatever long it is.
I bet they got razors. I bet you got the showers.
Yeah, when they come out, they're all clean shaven.
It's like an H&M catalog, my friend. Yes.
What is going on here?
Yeah.
That is the suspension of disbelief. You've lost me, Phil. You've completely lost me at that
point.
Now,
you know what? I wasn't lost in the film. I'm only lost now.
Right.
Because, like, Christopher Nolan allows you to believe shit while you're sitting in that seat. It's only later on that you have problems. You've already paid your money, son.
Yeah, sure. But I do. This is the least of these three films by a long way. And we did it long ago. One of the first ever crossovers with the Epic Film Guys. We went through all three of these films, and I had a real problem with this particular one.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, cool. My number 8, everyone, is going to piss Paul off, because it's about Toy Story.
Nope.
Yep.
Don't believe it.
Everyone.
Fuck off.
A big part of this show, in fact, the main plot line of this show, is that Buzz Lightyear does not think he's a toy. He thinks he's real and can fly and does all those things. to that end, when, you know, Andy or someone walks in the room, they all go limp. Now, hang on a second. Why doesn't Buzz? He doesn't know he's a toy. Ah! In your balls, Buzz.
Hot damn!
So you see, there's no real explanation for that. That is entirely illogical. Go ahead, Paul. Go ahead. Go ahead. Try.
Moving right along. I think that's a good point. Fair enough. My number eight is another one that I've long held to be a huge issue for me when it comes to films.
Mm-hmm.
It's from a film called War of the Worlds.
Oh.
Steven Spielberg's adaptation, 2005, starring none other than T to the C.
T to the C, as Tom Cruise
calls him. And the son, Robbie, for reasons I still don't really understand, having rewatched this whole scene yesterday, he decides, along with, by the way, okay, so here's the setup is, they're out in the countryside somewhere.
Tom Cruise and his family.
Tom Cruise and the family. The military have arrived to fight. They kind of drive through the masses of people up the top of this hill and start firing their whatever surface-to-air missiles and blah, blah, blah. And their big, huge, high-caliber machine guns. And Robbie decides he wants to see what's going on. And he's running away from his
dad. This is Tom Cruise's son, yeah.
And his sister, Dakota Fanning, who Tom Cruise has to put down next to a tree, basically says, stay here!
Mm-hmm.
And he chases up and tackles his son to the ground. And so he's like, you gotta let me go, Dad! You gotta let me... What? Why? Like, he wants to go and see / he wants to fight, I think is the implication.
That's, is that so?
That's bad enough. Anyway, so eventually Tom Cruise realizes he's got to let his son go because someone's trying to take his daughter away. Not in a horrendously bad way, but like, oh, who's left you here? And she's going, no, my dad said to stay. My dad said to stay. And they're like, no, you have to come with us away from the fight, which is weird given that this entire crowd of people have gone towards the fight to start with, but now the scene requires them to go the other way. So they are.
Okay.
Bad. It's a terrible scene.
Yeah.
He lets Robbie go. Robbie goes over the brow of the hill with the soldiers.
How old is Robbie?
He looks 15.
15, sure.
Yeah, somewhere in that sort of age range.
Idiot.
Massive explosion. Couple of cars that would have gone over the hill come rolling back down the hill on fire. Then the big, huge alien ships loom over the top and their death rays are falling everywhere. Everybody's fucking dead.
Yeah.
They run away and escape.
Mm-hmm.
End of the film comes out of the blue
from
nowhere.
Here it comes, everyone. Here it comes.
Robbie walking down
the
road.
Here it comes.
No problem at all. Just so we can have the Steven Spielberg happy families fucking moment.
Ah, yes. Paul
terrible
takes a bit of a shit on
fucking
this.
Fucking end to a film. Otherwise, I would have really loved this adaptation, this movie.
This didn't ruin it for you now. Come on.
It lowered my score.
Can I assume this entire movie was rewritten to be this movie? It's not like the book or anything? Or
no,
like
there's
the play
no
or
son
anything.
And children. It's,
yeah,
it's
okay.
One
so
guy.
So this is whole thing, right? So this is... That's fine,
it's not
Paul.
Fine. It's not fine. Don't show death and destruction. Hey, there's no reason for him to want to do this, like other than he's angry at the aliens for attacking his world.
Look,
no one's angry enough... It overrides your fucking sense of self-preservation.
So is the illogical element that he went or that he survived?
Both.
Okay.
They have flowed together perfectly. That scene is dumb. Like, when it's constructed, everyone's running towards... I'm like, what are you doing? Run the fucking other way. The aliens are over the brow of that hill.
Yeah, I remember just being shitting my pants with, like, how cinematically beautiful that,
yeah,
that was.
Yeah, the film's... It's gorgeous, don't get me wrong. It's just that then, at the end, I'm like, oh, how cheap... It's cheap.
I know, Paul doesn't like this at all. Paul doesn't like the end of my...
War of the Worlds.
Minority Report either. No.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Tom Cruise. Okay.
All right, that's my eight.
My number seven is, let's just say this. I know Paul doesn't recognize this movie, but there was a fourth Indiana Jones movie, and in it was a fridge-related scene. Now.
Slightly.
Oh, excellent. Good. Now, people, I think we all know what I'm talking about here. It's where Indiana Jones is in some sort of nuclear testing facility, and there's a whole fake town with fake houses and everything, and he's about to do a test where they blow up a nuke, and he's right in the blast zone. So the way he actually survives is by running into a house which has a fridge, which happens to be lead-lined because there's a label on it saying so, gets in there, and the nuke goes off, it immolates everything, and somehow he gets thrown clear and survives. Now...
Well, it blows the fridge.
Dude.
However far away.
There are so many more problems than that, okay? I watched this scene about four times last night, right? Not only... When the fucking blast happens, the houses actually get disintegrated. Everything in them blows up and just goes fire, right?
You're obviously not aware of the research which has shown that if there is a nuclear war, only two things will survive.
Cockroaches and fridges.
That's right.
I see. Well, I mean... But what happened... Here's the thing, though, right? Even if we allow the fucking... The buildings to be fucking, like, you know, disintegrated, for some reason... This fridge, which then gets thrown clear, the only thing that gets thrown clear, right? It catapults past a car that's speeding below it in the same direction, goes all the way over the ridge, hits the floor with like the force of a missile, rolls, and Indy just kind of spills out of it.
Are you not aware of the fact that fridges all come with safety harnesses in the event of needing to ride one in the event of a nuclear blast?
He could have been in umbilical fluid.
No, you're right. I'm obviously
I know. But I'm saying to you,
it's fucking ridiculous.
It is, but to me, to actually do that scene and to actually make it work like that, I don't know if someone lost it. It's not played like that could possibly happen. It's like, make that explosion as big as possible and do this.
That's one of the many problems with this whole film. But the reason why it climbed higher on my list is also because there's other scenes that fit the same fucking...
I know, dude.
Swinging through the fucking trees with monkeys to keep up with a car chase going through the forest. The jungle.
Inconceivable.
At best.
Just the audacity. Lead line saves you from radiation, right? It doesn't protect you from impact.
No.
So it's just what was this supposed to be? His hat's still on when he comes out of the fucking fridge.
Whoever wrote that scene, David Coe.
Spielberg. I heard a story about this scene. Spielberg actually, there's some long story about he wrote this scene in another movie and it got cut out, so he put it in this film.
Well, it's just proof.
So he wanted it, man.
Everyone can have a bad day.
Absolutely.
And this film is everyone having it's many bad days, about 90 of them in a row.
Exactly, totally.
yes.
What? No.
Yeah. All right, my number 7 then. Look, I had to cherry pick here. And I wasn't sure which... the whole list could be moments from the Fast and Furious franchise.
I agree completely. In fact, go ahead.
So I just picked the most egregious one.
So many.
You could pick the one where the fucking car and number 7 drives from one skyscraper straight across air into another skyscraper.
I'm going to be honest with you here, Paul. Is that 5? Is that Fast
7.
5? Fast 7. Furious when I saw 7. That on the trailer, I went, I'll watch that.
I've seen them all.
Shit, but I'm watching that.
I will go and see 9 when it comes out, and the rumor is 10's going to be in space. I'll go and see it.
I heard about that space rumor too.
Way back in my review of 7, I wrote, looking forward to Fast and the Furious. I think I wrote 13, where they're in space.
And then
I apologize for being wrong by 3 films.
10, yeah. Damn. Okay, so which is this one?
This is from Fast and Furious 6. And I could go the moment where Dom leaps across the freeway bridge thing and tackles Letty out of the air.
Oh my God, I just remembered that scene.
And manages to reverse her trajectory, and they both just don't plummet to their deaths, but he carries her back to the other car and they land perfectly, no problems at all.
I forgot about that scene.
But I'm actually going with the runway. The end climactic battle sequence where they're trying to chase the car, the plane which is taking off, and all that ensues. And the reason why it leapt to this point on my list is, to my absolute eternal amusement, the best effort, according to BBC News, for how long this runway is.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you. It was so long.
Is after calculating plane speed, car speed, and simultaneous action sequences, is that the runway is 18.37 miles long or 29.6 kilometers long.
The scene took so long. It's just like when they do the initial race in Fast and the Furious?
Yeah.
And it's the quarter mile, but it lasts 2 minutes, yeah. Right? And they've got time to fucking play with a laptop and shit it within less than 10 seconds.
That's way more viable than this, though, for me. I don't know why it is.
Because that one's putting a spin on it. It's going
in super slow-mo. This is just playing out, other than the occasional heroic moment, which goes into, from memory, slight slow-mo or slow-mo. It's played out in real fucking time.
Yeah.
This is astounding.
That's right. It's
fast. Slap your forehead dumb as fuck, and that's why it's here on my list.
Fair enough. My number 6 was from a favorite movie of mine, which I unfortunately, begrudgingly admit has an inconsistency. It's Ocean's 11. And I love me some Soderbergh sometime.
Okay, what's from this film then?
Well, the thing is, it's obviously a heist movie and all the cool dudes are in it, but basically there's an easy-to-miss kind of plot hole. As part of the big reveal, there's a fake SWAT team, which is, got Brad Pitt and all those guys in it pretending to be SWAT so they can actually take the real money out of the... They actually switch out the money in the vault for bags stuffed with hundreds of escort flyers. And it's only revealed at the end when the cops and whatever follow them and they're, holy shit. But there's actually no way that those bags or flyers could have gotten in there.
Oh, okay.
SWAT didn't bring them in. They only brought the things in there out. And even Steven Soderbergh admits on the commentary that I can't figure out how the team had time for that. So I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
But good on him. Good on him for acknowledging it.
Exactly. So, I don't know. Just enjoy the movie. Cool. Fine with me. Still like it.
Fair enough. That's a good choice then. My number 6 is another one which you and I have banged on about privately, but I don't know whether I brought it to the podcast in such a formal way. My number 6 is from one of my favorite films ever. It's definitely in my top 50, as we'll hear as I work my way through my top 100 films of all time. In fact, the newest episode of that will be dropping in very short order with Dan from Netflix and Swill.
Nice.
This particular film, my number 6, Fight Club.
Okay. So which part?
The illogical part here for me is the fact, okay, what Ed Norton, as the nameless protagonist, is able to do as Tyler Durden, which of course turns out to be himself, right? Makes no sense. Like, there's a shot in the, there's a shot in the security footage where he's dragging himself by the hair.
How do you feel about that scene?
It fucking shits me to tears.
Okay, because here's what I decided. Yep. If you're doing that and you're yourself dragging yourself by your hair along the thing, what you're doing is you're engaging the soles of your feet to push yourself along.
Not working.
Is it
where
not?
Are you propelling, where are you propelling yourself from? I can't.
From
I
the
can't,
foundation of the feet.
Okay, so I've got one hand here in my hair.
Yeah. So what you're doing, you're grabbing hold of yourself.
Yeah, but he's being dragged in a straight line. It's not going to work.
So he wasn't sliding along.
Like, where's your propulsion coming from? You know what I mean? It doesn't look like that. It looks like he's being dragged.
He's not pushing with his feet? No, because it looks like he's getting dragged.
Yes. But worse than that, though, is then when he realizes he needs to kill Tyler off. And he puts the gun in his mouth.
Yep.
Okay? And he pulls the trigger and effectively kills Tyler, i.e. commits suicide. Now, the bullet comes out the side of his face.
That's right.
Why then does it blast through the back of Tyler's head?
Because I believe, Paul...
Go on, this will be interesting.
What he's doing is he is...
Metaphorically.
Yes, he's metaphorically blowing that head off, but...
I'm sorry.
Changes angle at the very end.
I'm
in
sorry.
His head, Tyler's back of his
he
head.
He is went, in his head. He, yeah. Tyler is
I know
him.
That's why, which is why it can be different in his head.
No. Psychologically,
it's exactly the same principle as the dragging along.
Yes, you have to buy this whole thing and not question it. In other words, it's impossible. Even if him punching himself in the face and whatever, I can buy that.
That can, yeah.
I can buy that, no problem at all.
You know what's a bigger problem, right? The fact that he managed to gather these hordes of minions by being a crazy guy in a car park beating himself up.
Yes.
No one's going to go, hey, let me try that. But that's what they did in this movie.
Yeah, I know. It's completely illogical.
But you know what? Does it mess with your enjoying the film at all?
No,
doesn't for me.
I still like, again, it's in my top 50 films of all time.
Yeah. So obviously. Not enough.
It's illogical and it stands out. And when I rewatched it, I'm like, oh. did he really? We don't see it. He just pulls the trigger.
Yeah.
So it's not good.
But when he's got his gun, when Tyler's got his gun in his own mouth, then it's pointed at his back, at back of his. I know.
So I'm saying it doesn't work for me.
Understandable.
I get where you're coming from, but psychologically speaking, if it's you and you know you're not doing it, it's not going to work.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm down. Yeah. Okay. My number 5 is from Rogue One.
Oh,
Star Wars story. Now, Paul, at the end of this movie, right, when all the shit's going down, it's taking off, you see R2-D2 and 3PO. They're spotted bantering away inside the Rebel hangar on Yavin 4 while the Rebel fleet departs. Now, that means that they're in this hangar on the ground, all right? At the end of Rogue One, it basically ends 20 seconds before Star Wars begins. When Star Wars begins, what happens at the beginning of Star Wars? Princess Leia does what? She finds what? R2-D2 and C-3PO? Guess what? They're not there. They were in the hangar back on Yavin. They were never on that plane.
They
kind of
taken off on that plane?
Well, not the way it's filmed, because they are spotted in the hangar when that plane takes off. When that spaceship takes off.
Is that the last spaceship to leave, is it?
Well, it doesn't have to be. The point is that from the end of... remember the pods? That they shouldn't be on that ship.
I hear what you're saying, I'm like, can't they have gotten on that ship later?
That means they would have had to leave separately from the floor, from the ground, and then what, dock with that ship in the air?
I don't know.
Seems a little on the nose. And also, it's only minutes afterwards.
Are you saying the ship that they're on at the start of Star Wars takes off, you see it take off, and they're not on it?
Yeah. So how do they get to the, you might give it that, but the beginning of Star Wars is pretty soon after the end of Rogue
One. It's meant to be right up
so
to that
point. So
they
would have to have left literally that second. So to me, it's just it actually bugged me a little bit, but only later on.
Okay.
That's right.
All right, my number 5, here's where I had Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal. I don't acknowledge this film. Moving on, back to you for your number 4.
Ah. this scene in this movie has really always bothered me, okay? Remember Suicide Squad, Paul?
Yep.
So Amanda Waller, the asshole boss person who's putting together Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm. Is that Viola Davis?
Yeah, it is. So they're sent by on a mission by their boss, Amanda Waller, to extract a mysterious target, to arrive at the top of that skyscraper, and discover that the target itself is Amanda Waller. She's sending them to get her out, and how did she do that? That's one thing, right? But more than that, fearing that this shit wasn't nonsensical enough, she, at the end, as she walks out, shoots all of her own staff. Do you remember this?
Yeah, I do.
She goes, boom, 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 boom. And I was like, what the hell? And she's like, what? They didn't have the clearance. How about you hire people that have the clearance so you don't have to kill them? And the fact that she did it so cool, it really pissed me off because it was planned. It was just there to make her a bad guy.
Yes.
But that's not how shit works, man. You don't go kill everyone in your room.
I don't know if it's illogical as it's dumb. So, it makes sense to kill off people you don't want to have information about you. But why bother?
I don't buy any of that, man. Like, it's just so shitty. You just, I don't know. What can I say? But even so, again, who sends people on a mission to find themselves? Like, why'd you do that? It's a piece of shit. It's a piece of shit.
All right. My number four is another huge bugbear. Mm. And we've spoken about this online and offline numerous times. I know you don't agree with me. Don't care. It's fucking ridiculous. I'm talking about Star Wars, The Last Jedi, Leia in space!
Totally fine.
It's not totally fine.
She had the Force. The Force gives her everything she needs. She just flew through the air. She's Mary Poppins.
Nope.
Well, you can limitate yourself as a Force user.
What you can't do is survive the vacuum of space, because that's never been established before. Now, if she is the greatest Force user that's ever been made, why have we not seen that other than quick flashbacks of her training? Why haven't we seen it in the power shown through the series of films? Why is it the Emperor at the end of Return of the Jedi gets thrown down a big, huge hole in the space station and can't just levitate himself back up? Because that's not even in the vacuum of space.
See, here's the thing, though. Regarding the actual, like, I've heard lore that the Force...
Lore, which is made up after the fact to explain this bullshit fucking moment, but sure.
Actually, was in regard to something else, but there's actually, like, talk of, like, the Force can actually sustain you if you meditate and stuff like that. So
should have been established. Why doesn't the Force, which is all about equality... That's all it wants. It's not light or dark. It's equality. Why doesn't it rescue the Emperor?
One word, Paul. Midichlorians.
You see my point. I know. And also, it's even worse that they tried to justify it by saying, but we really need her for the last film. Why? She was dead. She died when they were post-producing this film.
This was... you know what I think happened? What's his name? The director. Ryan Johnson. Ryan Johnson. He's come in, seen whatever they were planning on for number two, and gone, no. Rey doesn't have any lineage.
We understand.
Yeah. You're right. It is a bit of a weird thing.
Given that Carrie Fisher's untimely demise, this would have been a perfect opportunity to offer her character. Like, tragic, awful, you know, and it was done by her son, and that would have driven his arc further as well. Well, it wasn't done. He didn't fire the triggers, but someone else did.
Yes.
It would have driven his ambivalence, uncertainty, whatever.
Really good call. But they
chose to bring her back in the third film with some pretty average CGI, which we all know is fake, but that doesn't help the fact we know it's fake. And all she does is, like, jump into his head at the right moment to, you know, force project fucking Han or whatever, and then she dies.
Well, that's even... Yeah, I know. There's a lot of talk about that. Let me ask you this. Do you like The Last Jedi, or do you like...
I don't particularly like any of these films, but okay, of the three...
Of the last two, which is better or worse, which is...
At the time, I would have said Last Jedi, but now I think they're both really bad films.
I like the middle one. I actually like the middle one.
Fair enough.
But I recognize that shit.
That is a terrible scene. It's completely illogical. In the world that had been established to that point, they're asking you to swallow someone who's got more power than any other character, yet who's never shown it. Hence, my number four.
Fair enough. My number three is something that I actually noticed when I saw this movie, and it's always bugged me a little bit. Jurassic Park, everyone.
Mm.
Now,
there's a few bits and pieces about this
one. Yeah, now this one happened. Now, there's actually a moment in where the Jeeps and everything, where the moment the hungry T-Rex sort of chases the Jeeps and they snap through the guard lines that are, you know, basically it seems like the dinosaur is coming in from the forest, snapping the guardrails and chewing down on the fucking...
And then
Jeeps.
There's a shot of the cliff or something?
Yes. Yeah. Then what happens is, right, as the scene progresses, Alan Grant and all the kids and stuff, they actually manage to escape the Jeeps and they go out through that same hole that the T-Rex made. But when they get there, it's a fucking cliff, like it's a 100-foot drop. Yeah. And they hold it. And
Dave,
I was like, whoa.
Dave from Super Movie Bros pointed this one out in the list of feedback.
I know. And I was like, wait, they just fucked up with the set. It's not like there was two holes and they went down the other. Nah.
Yeah.
So that means that dinosaur was levitating there before he came out. So I'm like, So that one always bugged me.
Well, someone just fucked up the continuity.
For that to happen, you know, that's huge,
on a big budget film. Yeah, 100%. Right there with you.
Nice one.
Right, my number three is from a Ridley Scott film called Prometheus.
Prometheus.
And Prometheus could have any
exactly.
number, which is why it's elevated so high on my list.
Fuck, I should have thought of this one. Good one.
Now, if I have to pick one scene, I'm going to narrow it right down to the biologist.
Yes.
He's a biologist, ladies and gentlemen, who you would think understands that unsafe, weird creatures should not be approached when you are not in... all kinds of safety kind of
you
lab.
Speak, of course, of the space cobra.
Yes.
That is, like, reared and looks dangerous. Yeah. And takes off,
like,
his glove.
The guy's, like, takes his glove off. He's like, here, kitty. Oh, you're so... Oh!
And, big surprise, it bites and fucks him up. So, like...
unbelievably dumb.
Oh, God, it could be anything.
It's so illogical. Like, it's completely Damon Lindelof. shoehorning in, oh, this character needs to die, let's do something crazy here. It's fucked.
Prometheus is such a piece of shit that's also so beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a really gorgeous looking
film. 100% yeah. agree. But there are a myriad of scenes where they're doing things which are completely and utterly illogical. Like even David, you know, he's got skin. I know he's a synthetic person, whatever. He's an android, but he's got real skin. He's touching any kind of goo whenever he fucking sees it. Like, this thing is supposed to be so fucking intelligent, it makes the rest of us look like, you know, single cell amoebas. But yet, even he's touching things that could theoretically destroy him in a heartbeat.
It's pure crap. Like, and also, Charlie's can't even run left. So, you know, damn. Yeah,
terrible film. Good call. My number three.
Good call. Now, my number two is a little something-something that came to me later on after having watched this film, Looper. You all seen Looper, speaking of Rian Johnson?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Looper, Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis play old and young versions of the same hitman. And this is one of those deals where the movie makes a rule and doesn't quite play by it. Now, at the beginning, you got Paul Dano running through a field, and what's happening is basically he's being told by someone in his past to come to a certain place, and to reinforce that point, they start cutting off his limbs and his fingers and stuff. And he's actually getting like tattooed or like scratched in his arm, like, come closer, come quicker. And he's running going, no, no, no. He's losing fingers. He's losing arms because they're doing that to him in the past, and it's happening. Finally, he loses legs, comes to it, boom, doesn't make it, dies. Now, at the end of the movie, spoilers, Joseph Gordon-Levitt chooses to stop Bruce Willis by turning a gun on himself. He's a younger version of Bruce Willis. He figures if I blow a hole in my own chest, Bruce Willis will cease to exist. And that is what happens. He goes, boom, takes himself out. Bruce Willis disappears. But you see, by the laws of this movie, that shouldn't have happened. What should have happened is Bruce Willis should have all of a sudden had a gaping hole in his chest.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I see what you're saying.
And then it just fucking hits down. So he shouldn't just disappear. That's what should have happened there. So to me, illogical, mate. Illogical.
Is that explained? Now, this is just
it's a tough one.
Me playing devil's advocate.
Please.
I don't have the answer here. I'm not trying to discredit at all. But like, okay, so Paul Dano loses a hand.
Yeah.
Right, his character. That's kind of like, you can live through that. No problem at all.
Yeah.
Right? Likewise, an arm losing, you know, bits and pieces. But you take a shotgun blast at that range to the chest, you're dead.
That's as good as I can
Does
get
that explain
for it?
It? I don't know.
Possibly, but then what's that sequence? Like,
it's not well enough explained. Yeah. I totally agree. I just wonder if that's
No, but that's probably better because we didn't see someone die in the past. So, maybe not.
Anyway.
But yeah, anyway, there you are. Always thought
that would be my defense of it, and whether that stands up or not, I don't know.
It's probably good though.
But all right, my number two is, it's probably not fair to pick on this film, even though it had a pretty big budget back in 1988 and was an absolute ripoff of E.T. That was what it was designed to be a few years later.
What are you talking about, Mac?
Mac and
me?
What is that?
What's on this thing? I think you told me about this, but I've never seen it.
Recently had to watch this film. Okay, then prepare yourself, my friend.
Bring it.
Here we go. I recently had to watch this for a good friend of the show, Jason, on the Binge Movies podcast we did, the WTF films, and this was one of the films that we watched. I'd never seen Mac and Me before, or if I had, I watched it back. No, I can't imagine as a 13-year-old watching this and remembering it.
Nope.
So it's a really cheap E.T. knockoff with terrible-looking aliens that look exactly like people in a terrible suit.
Yep.
As opposed to how good E.T. looked 7 years before and all the rest of it. Anyway.
I'm getting it now.
In a particular scene of the film, the young, I guess he's 10 or 11 years old, the hero of the film.
The Elliot of the film.
Yep. Who goes to a party. And for whatever reason, he and the next door neighbor of about the same age decide to have to take Mac with them. But they can't take Mac because he's an alien. And he looks like E.T.-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
So they put him in a teddy bear suit.
So not a basket with the fucking hood on?
No. Okay. In a teddy bear suit. And the next door mum picks him up to take him to this party. And here's this life-size or kid-size alien sitting inside a bear suit.
Yeah.
And she's like, what's that? He goes, oh, that's my new toy. It's like a robot that moves by itself. She goes, wow, technology's pretty amazing these days.
Really?
They get to the car park. The party's at Macca's. Macca's, by the way, was a sponsor of this film.
Everyone, in Australia, we call McDonald's Macca's.
Oh, yeah, McDonald's.
You call it Mickey D's.
Yep.
Just like that.
And completely weirdly enough, this is also illogical, there are a bunch of people in the car park just dancing in sync.
What? Why?
They just are. There's a big boombox in the middle, and they're not rapped. They're like literally dinking?
Is it?
Dancing, choreography. And I'm like, what's that? Anyway, the car drives past them, and they go inside to the party, and they walk Mac in there, and Mac sits down. And at one point, Mac flips off the arm of his teddy bear suit and elongates his arm to steal a drink, because he loves soft drink, from another kid who's like, jaw agape. And they're all like, whoa, what was that? Comes back, they rip the thing off him. Then, for no apparent reason, other people in the restaurant start dancing. So everyone starts dancing.
The dancing is what's bothering me.
Again, choreographed. So Mac, in a one shot, again, in the teddy bear suit where everyone thinks this is a toy, levitate cartwheels across the restaurant and lands on a counter and then starts doing this really shit shuffle dance.
Why is that dancing? Is it?
I don't know.
Is it presented in the movie as though this is somewhat of a musical?
No.
So it's just people doing that
in the entire film where they start doing this, and then because they're all choreographed dancing, these kids and
the choreograph is really what's bothering me.
And then they stop because this life-size teddy bear is just doing the shuffle on the counter, and they were like, "Wow, that's amazing."
Is there a combination of that scene? Like, what happens?
Look it up on YouTube. Okay, I swear to God, it's one of the funniest things you've ever seen. And there's two like government agents chasing them at this point, but they can't get through the throng of kids who are all pointing
dancing.
At them
going, no, okay,
it's so bad. The fact that everyone buys that this actually is a teddy bear that's dancing to the music. Fucking hell.
80s. Okay, cool. Very nice. I guess I'm going 10 to 1, right?
Yeah, 10 to 2, and then reveal your number 1
win. Word. Number 10, Doc Ock in Spider-Man 2. 9, The Beginning of The World Is Not Enough. 8, Buzz Lightyear Not Freezing in Toy Story. 7, The Fridge Scene in Indiana Jones 4. 6, The Big Reveal in Ocean's 11 with the pamphlets and shit. Number 5, Rogue One, Star Wars Story. Don't know where C-3PO and that was. 4, Suicide Squad, Amanda Waller capping everyone and being a bitch. Number 3, The Levitating T-Rex in Jurassic Park. 2, Looper, Gaping Hole, all that sort of thing. And number 1 is, this one is great. It's great. It's shit. I've always had a problem with this. Y'all remember No Country for Old Men?
Yes.
Yes. At the end of the movie, we see Sheriff Ed Tom walk into the hotel room where Llewellyn Moss was killed. He sees that the lock was punched out with that thing that Anton Chigurh dude has. And he's about to go in, and there's a shot of Anton Chigurh in the room, in the dark, with a gun, looking through the hole, the same hole in the door that the sheriff is looking at.
And Josh Brolin?
No, Sheriff. Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy, yep.
Yeah. And he's like, it's like this pretty moment, like, oh my God, he's in there. What's going to happen? Boom. Tommy Lee Jones walks in. No one there. Walks through the house. No one there. Checks the next room. No one there. Comes out. Nothing happens. It's basically saying the movie is saying to you, he's there, right?
Yep.
Walks in and nothing happens and it's just never talked about again. And I'm like, what the fuck is this shit?
So one shot he's looking, the next shot he's gone, is what you're saying.
Gone. He just disappears. Now, there's some people who think that he went into the cupboard, but that's not really in keeping with that character. There's some people who think that he's in the room next door. That is also making no sense. This is a crime scene. Why would he then take a room next to the crime scene where he killed someone? I don't think so. If I had to accept an explanation, is that right before this happens, Tommy Lee Jones talks to someone about this Anton Chigurh guy, and he's like, I don't know. He's like a ghost, basically. He's like a ghost. And then right before he walks in, you're seeing the inside of Tommy Lee Jones' head saying, right, I think he might be
in there. Also seen a reading of this film that basically says that Anton Chigurh is death.
Hence, okay, to be honest with you, that is a more interesting, like...
But it doesn't explain it.
It doesn't explain it, though. Yeah, but
it doesn't explain it in an acceptable way.
No, and for me, it's like, if he was going to say that's a flashback, this is what I'm thinking, it needed to be more obvious to you as an audience member. That just unsettled me. So I don't like this fucking movie.
Fair. I know you don't. It's not fair enough to like the movie. I think the movie's good. I don't like the ending that much. I will agree. All right, my list then, 10 through 2. Number 10, Joker. Like, what the hell? Why wasn't he arrested before he ever went into the TV station, given what had come before it?
Mm-hmm.
At number 9, how the hell do 3,000 cops survive underground for many, many months and come out looking like, as you say, H&M models? Number 8, Robbie surviving in War of the Worlds. Number 7, anything for the Fast and Furious franchise, but in particular, the 18.37 mile long runway at the end of the film. Number 6 is Fight Club and how the protagonist gets rid of Tyler Durden is just ridiculous and is Tyler Durden really doesn't hold up. Number 5, the fridge scene from Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Shit. Number 4, Star Wars The Last Jedi, Leia, Space Leia, Mary Poppins Leia, Leia with no power that's been anywhere close to this suddenly being the most powerful being in this universe. Number 3, Prometheus, anything you like from the film, but particular, I'm a biologist and I just don't care. Number 2, Mac and Me, life-size teddy bear. And my number 1, with a bullet, immediately, the second that we announced this topic and worked it out, well, here's my number 1, because it's the entire premise of the film.
What?
Wayne, there's an asteroid coming towards Earth and it's going to destroy us all.
Yes.
Unless we can put a nuclear bomb on it and destroy it and separate the two halves to go around the Earth. I mean, that alone is interesting enough.
That alone is like, it's going to break perfectly in half, everyone.
Here's what we should do. We should totally train deep sea miners to be astronauts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the only way.
And no,
it's the only way.
It is the only way. And we'll fly some astronauts up there with them, you know, at least to get them there. But nobody says, a la Ben Affleck too, of course, Michael Bay, the director of the film, in the commentary. But wouldn't it have made more sense to train astronauts to be deep sea miners? Shut the fuck up, Ben.
I remember. This is good stuff.
Acknowledging it in his own way.
Absolutely. And you know what? We still watch and talk about that movie. So they win.
It's still a 4-star film.
They win.
Yeah, I know people have issues with that. It's Criterion release. I don't care. I like this movie, but it's dumb as fuck. And I fully acknowledge that. So if you can't get on board, then you're going
to
hate it.
Take that over the cracker scene every day.
People do. Yeah. Your love for that scene is renowned. Any honorable mentions, Wayne, to wrap up today?
Real quick. You know when Predator and they all unloaded into the fucking jungle after that? Yeah, and they used all of their ammunition and didn't know what they were shooting at. I always thought that was a bit odd.
you back your fellow soldier in.
Yeah, but it was like, you're professionals. At least know what you're shooting at. The end of Grease where they flew into the air with the car. I remember thinking that was a bit weird. And speaking of Star Wars, you know when Rey and Kylo fucking make out at the end there? I had a big problem with that. I was just like, this is stupid. You're only kissing him because of just really bad fan. There's no reason to kiss him. There was no reason.
Really bad shipping fan fiction going on. My only other mention is Martha from Batman. Very close to the list, but I didn't feel like I could shit on Batman any more than the two I already had list or the Batman universe. So there we go. That's our list. What about yours? Let's wrap up this particular episode with a segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with good friend to the show, Nicholas, the epic film guy himself,
who said, the G.
Marvel not having the sack to kill Tony in Infinity War still gives me so much what the fuck, because Endgame could actually have been a good movie without him.
What the fuck are you talking about, also, man?
Basically the first two-thirds of Endgame and Tony's entire character in it.
Oh, fuck off!
Fuck Endgame, I guess, is what I'm saying.
What the fuck? You had to buy the farm then? Otherwise, you're not coming to see the next movie. Oh, damn.
You can't handle the truth.
According to
Nicholas Haskins.
Gidget Vonnerud from the Retro Cinema Podcast said, oh, God, so many. But the end of Shutter Island makes no sense. So he is the most insane person there is. So let's give him a gun and see how that plays out, shall we?
Oh, no. That whole, did it have blanks? Did it have anything?
All the Mission Impossible movies. Why doesn't Ethan just stay in disguise the whole time? And then she said, Gravity, whole film, just stupid.
Wow.
Damn.
These are some harsh shit.
Shit.
Damn, girl.
Oh, shit. From Stephen from the Super Retro Throwback Podcast, the rooftop jump in Die Hard, whilst awesome, is highly illogical to survive due to your 95% chance of decapitation thanks to the sheer velocity.
Yeah, it would kind of cut you in half.
Then from the Please Let's Watch This Podcast, this entire fucking film, picture of Scarlett Johansson in Lucy. God, I hate that film. We did a special call. Please don't watch this, where I rallied against it for a solid 40 minutes.
It's a big old piece of shit.
It is a terrible piece of shit. From Dan Brennick from Netflix and Swirl, the aforementioned, pretty much the last hour of Interstellar.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
I don't really understand that film. It's my least favorite Nolan. Mm-hmm. So, from LJ Human, Luke said, Countdown. Despite the movie repeatedly clarifying that if you beat the clock by 1 second, you survive, the editing the finale fucks all that right in the ear, ridiculously cutting to the countdown clock between the action, which doesn't match the time passing.
I thought he was shitting on our show. And fair enough.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Fuck that countdown.
Fucking stupid show. Hendo Henderson from the Movie Journey Podcast said, Armageddon, same thing, same reasoning that I said.
Fair enough.
But Ben Affleck asking Michael Bay, shut the fuck up. Word Salad Radio Joe said, the whole dumb cast of Alien Covenant exploring an unknown planet with no safety precautions, eat my ass.
Yeah, absolutely.
The whole dumb cast of Annihilation walking into a death bubble after every other team disappeared forever, eat all the asses, man. Now, this one has particular pertinence, Wayne.
Okay.
This is from Justin from the Sorry I Married a Movie Geek Podcast, who, of course, we've been on their show, they've been on our show.
Yeah.
Lovely to hear from Justin. Justin said, pretty much all of The Saint from 1997. Given Wayne's too busy laughing, I'll answer for him.
I stand resolute, motherfucker. I love Ralph Saint. I love him.
Chris Yeeney, a high-level patron of the show, good friend. The entire third act of Dark Knight Rises, Wayne back to Gotham and able to fight cops in good condition after Month Underground. There you go. Number two, the Battle of Endor. So Ewoks defeating stormtroopers.
What? Logs can defeat like big hulking tanks and shit. It's fine.
And number one, swinging on vines in movies where that happens.
Yeah, fair enough.
The cinema guys, Brad said, can we just say any movie Vin Diesel makes? Although Fast and Furious is the greatest ridiculous movie franchise ever.
The first one, yeah, I don't know.
From the Ghost of Stratosphere podcast, the scene in Man of Steel where Kevin Costner's father sacrifices himself.
Really good call. Really good call. There would have been no problem with just Clark wandering out and pretending he's just, I can, you know, it's a bit hard to get through this wind and come on, Dad, come with me. That would have been fine. He didn't have to stay there and let him die. Very good call.
This one upsets me a great deal. From Judy, good friend from the Shaken Not Nerd podcast. The plane flying for 45 minutes in Dunkirk without fuel. I'm okay with that one. Fine. Batman getting back to Gotham in The Dark Knight Rises in time to save the city. There's a theme developing for that film.
I know the answer to that, but keep going.
And Evil Dead 2. Sorry, Paul and Dave from the Super Movie.
Which part of it?
He just said the whole fucking film is boring and not funny.
Oh,
how?
Bitch, please.
Damn it, Tony. You've made me angry. Dan is not the problem, said number three, people randomly. Number two, breaking out. Number one, into song. Like that one a lot. From X-Lurker FC. This is the winner. The scene in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull where Indiana Jones survives an atomic bomb blast by hiding in a lead-lined refrigerator. Yes, movies often ask us to suspend disbelief, but this scene insults our intelligence.
Absolutely.
Way too much. From the San Dimas School of Film, the entire runtime of Mother.
It's just a bad time.
Couldn't agree more. Delon Movies had this to say. Armageddon, moment one. Supposedly brilliant scientists posit nuking an asteroid from the inside will result in it splitting evenly in half, with each cleanly cut piece completely missing the Earth. Moment two, it actually happens just like that. That's not how fucking bombs work. Sigh. And last few from the Facebook listening community. Mina Harker said, number three, Martha. Number two, musicals. Number one, the X-Men continuity. That's a good call.
Oh, yeah.
Very good. Aaron Dundee said, you can just do the list with the whole Fast and Furious franchise. That being said, number three, parachuting cars out of an airplane and perfectly landing them on the road. Number two, dropping a supercar out of one skyscraper into an adjacent skyscraper. And number one, blowing up a helicopter by shooting a conveniently placed bag of grenades.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one. Nice.
Philip Wilson said, The Last Jedi, the Leia scene, literal physical reaction and disbelief of seeing it. The whole movie could apply, to be honest. Batman versus Superman, why did you say that name? And Prometheus, almost the whole movie. But the scientists taking off their helmets very early on, followed by being scared of ancient dead thing, then playing with a very much alive alien death snake. Just so stupid.
Hell yes.
And finally, Jake Humphrey said, the burial scene in The Nun. Do you remember The Nun?
Oh, that piece of shit. Yeah, that sucked.
If the demon had the kind of power to instantly sort of push someone in a grave and then why did it not just escape from the fucking monastery?
Yeah, that's a good
point. Very good point. Terminator 2, Terminator Genesis, just all of it. And number one, Star-Lord breaking the mind control that had the fight won in Infinity War.
Boy, that pissed me
off. Like, I get it. He killed your lady, but I literally had Thanos beaten. The gauntlet was almost off. If he had waited 5 more seconds, he could have done what he wanted. Instead, he attacked Thanos and killed half the universe. My only
real
problem
with that movie. He was always a bitch.
There we are. That's it. Thank you so much for all your feedback. We had a shit ton this week. We really, truly do appreciate it. Sorry.
Seems like Paul read them all, though.
Get through it. I do apologize for my punchish. My ex-co-host. All right, Wayne, how do listeners give us feedback week in, week out on the show?
Go ahead and Google us, y'all. You'll hit our socials and then you can send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at thecountdownpc. Like and follow the show on podbean.com where we host, and check out ccradio.com.au for ourselves and other great Aussie podcasts. And finally, the link in the show notes to the Facebook listener community is where we hang out and do most of our chatting with the listeners. All right, that's it for episode 286. Wayne, what's happening for episode 287? Stop looking panicked. We've already recorded it.
Excellent. What if I told you, Paul, that I can't remember what one we recorded? Hang on, cunt. Let me think.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I've ever heard.
You go outside and
everyone
dick
in this room suck that is shit now dumber. For having
it's
listened to it.
Giving you time God have mercy to find what the answer is.
Oh, fuck. Is that what you were doing? All right, hang
the
on.
Top 10 villain comeuppances.
There you go. That's the one. I was just about to say in 5 minutes.
It is the topic of next week's countdown. So we've already recorded it. It's a good episode. Good fun. You'll hear it in short order.
It goes well.
That is it for today's episode 286 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?
Shut the fuck up, Paul.
What are we going to do? We're going to catch you next week. Cheers.